I'm releasing this episode on Valentine's Day. So this is my Valentine's Day gift to you. So here's my question. What did you get me? No flowers, no chocolates, not even a card. You've let me down. And you've let yourself down. Run the theme music!
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the sharp range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. Woo! Merry Christmas! So, boys and girls, I've got a packed show for you. Packed. I've rammed it all in there. I've squashed it in. I've squeezed it. I've done all sorts to it. And there it is. There's your podcast. Now, you take it, shove it in your ears. Nice one. So, I've got a few emails. One I want to mention is from Benji Pearson, our US Scandinavian correspondent. I don't know if you remember. In the quiz last episode, I had two questions about St. Lucia of Sweden. Well, not of Sweden, but they do celebrate St. Lucia in Sweden. Now, I've just said St. Lucia three times now, and it ain't St. Lucia, it's St. Lucia. I've been making a fool of myself all this time, and it's not just me. Other people are doing it as well. We see the L-U, then the C and the I and the A at the end, and we think that's a ch sound. Well, apparently it's not. And I'll tell you how I know, because Benji told me, and Benji knows, boys and girls. And he sent me some pictures of their St. Lucia celebrations that they have at their home, where they dress up in like the white with the candles around your heads. And they also got to be in the St. Lucia program put on by the Swedish Heritage Society of Utah in Salt Lake City. And it's the biggest St. Lucia program in Utah. And the same group got to perform at IKEA for their celebrations. And there ain't much more Scandinavian than IKEA, boys and girls. I'll tell you that for nothing. And King Charles was in the younger kids group, and he dressed up as a tomten, or a Yule tomten, which is Christmas elf. And I've talked about that in the past. That's their version of Santa Claus in Sweden. So thanks so much for sending those pictures through, Benji. And also, in the last episode, I mentioned about the old Christmas pickles that I sent out. Like, that's a good 2 or 3 years ago now. If you sent me in a story or something like that, I'd send you a Christmas pickle. And he still got his, and he showed me a picture of it on his Christmas tree from this Christmas just gone. So thanks for that, Benji. I really appreciate it. Thanks for getting in touch. I probably didn't reply to your emails, so consider this the email reply. And anyone else who's emailed me, this is also the reply to you as well, because I'm really bad at replying to emails. I've got a lot going on. I've got two annoying kids. I've got to spend most of my time in my bedroom reading my old Peanuts books, because I love Charlie Brown. So I ain't got time for emails, have I? Of course not. No one has if they're reading Charlie Brown. No. You've got to get your priorities straight. Right, let's get on with the show. We're starting with this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Now, boys and girls, before we get into this episode's version of A Christmas Carol, I received an email from Christy Easter about last episode's version of A Christmas Carol. I don't know if you remember, it was a stage version that I talked about that was televised. And this is what she's put in her email. After listening to your most recent episode and your review of another version of A Christmas Carol, I just had to share the link to one of the best stage productions I have ever seen. It's an absolutely phenomenal production. It stays very true to the book, including Walker, which I know can make or break it for you. She's right, it can. And the same actor has played Scrooge in this production for, are you ready? 27 or 28 years. 27 years he's been playing Scrooge. Goodness me, that's incredible. I've been lucky enough to see it a few times and plan to go again in December of this year. If you are ever in Massachusetts, I suggest you check it out. Yeah, I don't know when I'm likely to be in Massachusetts. My work doesn't generally take me out that far. I normally work within like a 5-mile radius of my home. But anyway, if I am in Massachusetts, I would love to check it out. Now, I'm going to put the link on the show notes so you can check it out. And if you're ever passing Massachusetts, I'm guessing it's got to be at Christmas. If you go in this time of year, I don't fancy your chances. But anyway, if you are in Massachusetts at Christmas, check it out. Check out the link. But now, boys and girls, it's this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. Now, I have a book called A Christmas Carol and its Adaptations. And half of the book is just listing different versions of A Christmas Carol. It goes up to about the year 1999, I think. So anything from the last 25 years isn't in there. And I go through and I try and pick a different one each time. And I found one, and it's an episode of a TV show called Dear Phoebe. And it says the episode was called Ebenezer Fosdick, and it's a loose version of A Christmas Carol. Well, it's not. It's not a version of A Christmas Carol at all. The most Christmassy thing about it is the title, Ebenezer Fosdick. But then when I was looking it up on Wikipedia, that episode's not even called Ebenezer Fosdick. Or on IMDb, it's not called Ebenezer Fosdick. But in the trivia of IMDb, it says the original title card was Ebenezer Fosdick. That's the only thing that makes this a version of A Christmas Carol. So am I wasting your time with this segment? Well, yes and no. I mean, yes, in that, yes, I'm wasting your time, but I'm wasting your time with the whole podcast. Let's face it, this podcast is the ramblings of a madman. So, you know, the whole thing. But if you love Christmas, then I'm not wasting your time, because this is a Christmas episode of a show that you might not be aware of and you might want to check out. So I'm going to run through it and you're going to listen, hopefully, or you're going to turn off, one or the other. So this TV show called Dear Phoebe starred Peter Lawford, and he played a character called Bill Hastings. And I'm going to read out the blurb from Wikipedia. Bill Hastings, a college professor in Los Angeles, leaves his job at UCLA to pursue a career as a journalist. He lands a job with the Los Angeles Daily Star, where his duties include writing the newspaper's advice column, Dear Phoebe, supposedly written by a fictitious elderly woman named Phoebe Goodhart. At the newspaper, Bill meets sports writer Michelle Mickey Riley. They share a mutual attraction, which Bill is open about. But their romance is a rocky one, because Mickey prefers to hide her feelings for Bill by competing strongly with him for plum writing assignments from their newspaper's stingy and crusty old managing editor, Clyde Fosdick. So the main character, Bill Hastings, is played by Peter Lawford, and Mickey Riley is played by Marcy Henderson. Now, you might have heard of Peter Lawford. I was aware of him. I couldn't name one single thing that he'd ever done, but I knew him because he was a member of the Rat Pack, but I was pretty sure he wasn't a singer. Turns out he wasn't. He was an actor. And this was one of the things he acted in. Now, this is quite interesting. He was married to JFK's younger sister, Patricia Kennedy. And because of that, he was often known as Brother-in Lawford, which is quite funny. Now, here's the deal. He was a member of the Rat Pack, but he got kicked out because he fell out with Frank Sinatra. And this is what happened. So JFK was going on a trip to the West Coast. So Peter Lawford, because he was brother-in-law to JFK, he arranged for JFK to stay at Frank Sinatra's house in Palm Springs. And Frank's getting all excited about this. And he even built a helipad on his grounds so that JFK could come in by helicopter. But Bobby Kennedy, JFK's brother, he was advising JFK to distance himself from Frank Sinatra because of his mafia ties. And so instead of staying with Sinatra, JFK cancelled and stayed with Bing Crosby instead. And Frank Sinatra went ballistic, smashed up the helipad, and told Peter Lawford, "We're no longer friends." And that was it. They were no longer friends again after that. That's why he left the Rat Pack. That's got nothing to do with Christmas, by the way. I mean, if you're imagining that story in your mind, you could imagine them with Santa hats on, or maybe they're even dressed as Santa, but they weren't, or probably weren't. They might have been, actually. In fact, they were. They probably weren't. Right, so let's get back to this show. So you got the Dear Phoebe intro. So it opens up with Peter Lawford. Now, I'm going to keep calling him Peter Lawford instead of Bill. It's just easier for me. So just work with me on this. He's there with his mate Humphrey Winston Humsteader. We'll just call him Humphrey. And we get all the exposition of the episode here, because Humphrey is talking about how the boss is probably going to cancel the Christmas party. And Peter Lawford is talking about buying a Christmas card for a little boy called Joey. Now, turns out Joey was this real rapscallion that Peter Lawford befriended, and he ended up going to military school, where he became a right upstanding young man. And he's a very upstanding young man. And I say young, very young, because he was only about 8 when this was recorded. So then we cut straight from this to Peter Lawford going back to his apartment, and he has a little voice, and it's little Joey. He's just been talking about, don't you know, hiding in his cupboard. And he opens the cupboard, and Joey has got all his stuff with him because he's running away from military school. And he's got a present for Peter Lawford, and you think it's a Christmas present, but no, listen to this.
Well, this is for you. I made it in shop.
Thank you, Joey. Shouldn't it say, don't open till Christmas?
It's a going away present. Christmas is for cream puffs.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and he's made him a belt and a gun holster, and he's got a very interesting way of talking. Did you hear that in the clip I just played? For an 8-year-old, it's a very interesting way that he speaks. And this little chap, whose name is George Winslow, he was in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, and he was also in 3 episodes of the Blondie TV show. Don't know if you remember Blondie with Dagwood. Anyway, then he retired from acting in 1958 when he would have been about 12. Short career, but he was in quite a lot of stuff in those few years. He wants to go and join the Foreign Legion and wants to go to Morocco. And Peter Lawford's like, oh, do you know what? The last bus to Morocco is just gone because I was looking at the timetable earlier. So why don't you stay here the night? Let's get you something to eat. And there's a funny bit where the kid says, oh, I've already eaten when I got here. And Peter Lawford opens his fridge and it's completely empty apart from this chicken carcass. And it is literally just the bones. And all the bones are still there, but there's no meat on it. And I found that quite humorous. It's interesting. I should mention this, actually, because it's got a laugh track a lot of the time, but not all the time. And you're thinking, that was a joke, wasn't it? Why is there no laughter for that bit? Oh well, move on. Then there's a knock at the door, so Joey runs and hides in the cupboard, and it's Joey's mum. And his mum comes in while Joey's hiding back in the cupboard, and Peter Lawford's like, oh, hold on a second. And he points to the cupboard, and then he opens the cupboard, and Joey's fallen asleep in like about 5 seconds. I don't know. Anyway, he lifts Joey out of the cupboard, puts him on the sofa, he's still asleep, and he's chatting to the mum, and the mum says that Joey was given an invitation to this father and son banquet, but Joey's father ran out on them when he was younger, and so that's probably why Joey's all upset and why he's decided to go AWOL for military school. And then this bit's quite funny, because Peter Lawford says, well, maybe I can help you find his dad. Have you got a picture of him? And she goes, yeah, I've got a family picture. And she takes out this picture, and there's her, Joey, and this bloke stood there, but his face has been cut out. And he's like, yeah, I don't know if that's going to help much, which I quite like that. I thought, yeah, that's mildly humorous. I'm sure the laugh track went crazy for that bit. Then mum tells Peter Lawford that the last she heard, Joey's dad was working as a repairman for Honest Henry, and I'll play the clip for it. Have a listen to this.
The last I heard of him a while back, he was working for someone named, Honest Harry.
Honest? Why, he fixed my television set.
Does it work good now?
Not at all.
That was him, all right.
Now, don't you worry. Tomorrow I'm going to go out and find Mr. Cragen, and you and Joey will have a wonderful Christmas after all.
So then we cut to the next day, and we got a brief bit where Peter Lawford is talking to Mickey, his love interest, and she's writing out her Christmas list, and we find out that she's bought an electric razor for Peter Lawford. And she also mentions that Fosdick won't give them any money to have a Christmas party this year. Then we cut to Fosdick's office, and he's got this little box there that he can make an announcement to the whole office. So it's got like a microphone on it and loads of switches so he can choose which department he goes to. So he turns on all the departments and makes his announcement. Have a listen to this.
Now hear this. I wish to announce there will be no Christmas party this year. I have decided to give my usual generous donation to charity instead. And charity begins at home.
And so now everyone in the office knows there's not going to be any party. So all the staff go in to give him a hard time. And he's like, well, you know, you're not having a party. And Peter Lawford's like, hang on, everyone, let me deal with this. I have a plan. So everyone leaves. And he says to the boss, I've got a great story. This story's going to be front page news. A story of Christmas redemption. You're going to love this story so much, you're going to want to give everyone a Christmas party. Let me just play it for you. He says this. This is what he says.
Does the staff get its usual Christmas party at your expense?
If your story's as good as you say it is, yes.
It's better. You are going to stage a reconciliation between a father and son who haven't seen each other in 4 years.
A tearjerker?
You could become the sob brother of the profession.
A sweet little tow-headed cherub, torn by circumstances from the father he loved and adored. His faith in humanity restored on the eve of Christmas Eve by a great reporter who came out of retirement.
The one and only G.R. Fosdick.
So we find out this is the eve of Christmas Eve when it's all happening. And the boss is like, okay, this story does sound pretty good. If the story pans out, I will give you all the Christmas party. So then we cut to Peter Lawford's apartment, and Joey's there, and his mum, and Fosdick. And Peter Lawford has arranged for Joey's dad to come and repair his TV. He's phoned Honest Henry and he says, you know, I specifically want Murray Cragan to come and fix my TV. So Joey's there saying, what's going on? And Peter Lawford explains to him that when that doorbell rings, that's going to be your dad. Well, the doorbell rings, the door opens, and this woman comes in with Honest Henry written on her overalls. And they're like, well, you're not Murray Cragan. I specifically asked for Murray Cragan. And she says, he got fired this afternoon, so they sent me instead. So Joey obviously gets very upset, and they haven't found his dad. Then we cut to the next day. Peter Lawford's in his office, and he's been on the phone trying to find Joey's dad. And Mickey comes in, and so does Humphrey. And they're like, you know, have you had any luck? He's like, no luck. And then the phone rings. And it's the employment office. And they say that they found him. And he's working at a Santa in one of the department stores. So Peter Lawford goes down there. And this is quite a funny scene, actually. You've got these three Santas all, like, getting dressed up in their outfits. And the boss comes in. And he's like a sergeant major. And these three Santas are like the soldiers. And he's sort of like going up and down and inspecting them. Let me play a little bit for you, because I found this funny.
You, pull in that chest. Throw out your stomach.
Sorry, sir. I ought to break you. Look at this. Do you call that clean?
No, sir.
You, of all people, you're a 10-year man, aren't you?
Re-enlisted twice, sir.
I like that. You know, instead of like sucking your stomach, put out your chest, it's sucking your chest and stick out your stomach. I found that quite funny. Only mildly, but you know, you take your laughs where you can get them. And the boss is giving Joey's dad, Murray, he's giving him a real hard time because he looks pretty naff as a Santa. And there's a mildly funny bit where the boss is getting him to do his Santa laugh. And I'm not going to bother playing it for you. It's not that funny. You'll listen to it and go, that wasn't funny, even though I said it was funny. So I don't want you to doubt my sense of humour. Anyway, I've got to say at this point, right, his dad, I'm looking at him thinking, wow. He looks pretty old, not just because he's got the Santa outfit on, okay, with the white hair and that. I'm thinking, he looks like he could be Joey's granddad. I wonder how old he is. So I looked up the actor, whose name I've forgotten, didn't write it down. He was only 38 at the time. So, yeah, he would have been about the right age to have an 8 or 9 year old son. So, yeah, he's clearly had a hard life. Then Peter Lawford comes in and just takes him off and says, you know, I'll take this Santa. Thanks very much. And they're driving to the office and Peter Lawford's explaining to him, you know, the son needs a dad. Don't you want to be a dad? And the dad's like, well, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, something like that. They go to the office and everyone's there decorating the tree. And I think this is the Christmas party. They've got this big tree. They've got Christmas music playing in the background. All the staff are there. And Peter Lawford's like, right, everyone clear off out. Joey's going to be here. And Joey and his mum turn up and Joey's not in a good mood. He's saying, oh, Peter Lawford, he's not calling him Peter Lawford, he's calling him Bill. Peter Lawford breaks his promises just like everyone else. And Peter Lawford's like, look, go on through to the office. And he goes through and he stood there looking at the Christmas tree and it's lovely. And then his dad, dressed all up as Santa, comes up behind him and starts chatting to him as Santa, not as his dad. And Joey's sort of saying about how great his dad is. But then Santa, or his dad, is like, well, I'll try and get your dad to be here for you. And he walks off, and then Mickey comes over, and she says, oh, while you're waiting for Santa to come back, shall I sing you a Christmas song? And she starts singing Silent Night, and I say she starts singing Silent Night. I'm not sure if it's her, to be honest. Have a listen to it. This is her talking, then her singing.
Would you like to hear a Christmas song while you're waiting?
Sure. Can you sing?
I'll try.
Silent Night.
Yeah, that was interesting, that bit. Then everyone comes in and they're all singing Silent Night together. And then the dad, he comes in after everyone else, sort of stood at the back. He's dressed in like a suit and tie, all smart now. Joey turns around, sees him and goes running over. And the mum goes running over as well. And they have a big hug. And then they finish singing the song and Fosdick makes an announcement.
And now we'll give out the presents, including New Year's bonuses for everybody.
Bonuses!
Including me.
So there you go. That's him not being Scrooge anymore. His Christmas heart has been melted and he's given everyone a bonus. I said it wasn't a version of A Christmas Carol. It's a perfect version of A Christmas Carol. It's not. It's not at all. And then the final scene is Mickey is like, oh, where's Peter Lawford? And she goes into his office. And he's there using the new razor that she's bought him. and he's like, oh, come and get your present. And he holds it up above his head. And above that is a huge, massive bunch of mistletoe. And she goes in, the door closes, and I guess they kiss under the mistletoe. So that's the end of the episode, right? That is the end of the episode. And then you get this really weird bit where an actress called Jan Clayton, she was famous for being in one of the Lassie films, among other things. She's there next to a Christmas tree with her kids. She's got four kids. And she's reading Twas the Night Before Christmas. And then she looks up and starts chatting to the camera about Christmas and what a wonderful time of year it is and how nice it is spending Christmas with her family. And she says, you know, I and all the people at Campbell's, because this show was sponsored by Campbell's, wish you a very Merry Christmas. And then the credits run. And it's like, what was that? What relevance did that have to the episode? She wasn't in the episode at any point. I don't think she was ever in the show. But they just, I don't know. It's the strangest thing. But it was there, kids. I mean, if it had been after the credits had rolled, then you could have assumed it was from the TV network. But it wasn't. It was part of the show. And then the credits, I don't know. I do not know, boys and girls. I don't know. But anyway, that was it. That was this version's very, very, very loose version of A Christmas Carol. The loosest version I've ever done, without a doubt. It was all right. As a version of A Christmas Carol, it ain't one. But as a Christmas special, if you want something, this is 70 years old, boys and girls. Everyone that was in that, even the little kids, sadly, everyone that was in that, they're dead by now. So, you know, if you want a blast from the past, it's worth checking out. It's not great, but it's not that bad either. If you type in Dear Phoebe Christmas episode on YouTube, it'll come up. It's 25 minutes. Why not watch it? Next week, boys and girls, it'll be a proper version of A Christmas Carol. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, you wouldn't think of it, but most of the patrons at the Tiki Bar, they are rugged outdoorsy types. You know, they like to get drunk in the garden. So, as listeners of Total Christmas know, Jack recently appeared on the second January episode of my podcast, Festive Foreign Film Fans. Maybe you didn't hear that. Festive Foreign Film Fans. Now, I know this sounds like an appeal for all of Jack's three listeners to go and listen to my podcast, which it is. But he also created a Do You Hear What I Hear event. We learned quite a bit about Jack and his Christmases from our interview. He has an extensive agenda of holiday activities. I mean, he goes to shows, he visits his senior neighbors, he wears garland and he waves at cars, he sings at the pub. I want to do all of these things. Well, just as an aside, I plan to adopt all of them, except I can't sing at the pub. But my co-host Mark can do that. So anyway, more to the point. As we were talking, Jack said something about taking time to speak to a limey, and my ears began to tingle. Some Americans are familiar with this term in reference to the English people. At least the more mature ones are, and not that I would know anything about that. But if you were going to use this description today in the States, it would be most likely to claim how a pie or a drink or some other food item was just a bit too citrusy. The real question comes down to why we would ever refer to people as limey. I mean, how would that make any sense? But once you know, it becomes obvious. But I wasn't familiar with the history. For this lesson, you need to know that back in the day, scurvy was a real threat to sailors. An estimated 2 million sailors died of the disease. In fact, it would often decimate an entire ship crew. In an 1820 textbook on nautical medicine, a Navy surgeon described the symptoms of scurvy, and they were dramatic and terrible. soft gums and bleeding organs, tendons, skin, and ulcers and blisters all over the body, emaciation, and finally, death. Scurvy is a deficiency caused by a lack of vitamin C. The body does not naturally make vitamin C, so it has to come from foods rich in the vitamin, such as citrus or green vegetables. Before refrigeration, sailors on long voyages relied mostly on salted or non-perishable food, and they had no access to fresh green vegetables or fruits. So up until about 300 years ago, a sailor on a long voyage would often not return home because he would have developed scurvy. However, in 1757, a Scottish surgeon named James Lind collected information about scurvy and learned that it had often been cured by a diet of fresh fruits and vegetables, which the sailors weren't getting. Lind understood that it was impractical to carry a lot of fresh produce on a ship in those days, but he found that juice alone from the lemons and limes and oranges could cure and prevent scurvy. Lind recommended that sailors drink the lemon juice at sea, and the Royal Navy eventually took Lind's advice and put lemon juice in the sailors' daily ration of rum, known as grog. Note to self, add lemon juice to daily ration of rum. By the 1800s, limes, which were grown in British colonies, were cheaper than lemons, so lime juice was used instead. The Australians, New Zealanders, and South Africans began calling English ships and sailors lime juicers, and then later limeys. The term was applied to English immigrants, and then to all the British, eventually losing any connection with the sea. It was later adopted by Americans in the early 20th century and was predominantly used as a slur. By 1925, the usage of limey in America was so commonly known that it was featured in newspaper headlines. I suppose the irony is that the Brits got a derogatory nickname for what? Discovering the cure and preventing the spread of a fatal illness? But if you think about it, limey isn't so bad. I mean, it could have ended up lemonhead, peeler, or pulper. Cheers and happy Christmas.
You know, I knew that one. I knew that that's why us Brits were called limeys. I didn't know the whole story. I just knew it was because on the boats they'd have limes because they needed the vitamin C. Great work, Bob. Very enlightening. Thanks so much for that. He's going to be back in a bit. But right now, boys and girls, we're doing this. Boys and girls, we haven't had a joke in quite a while. And I'll tell you why. Because the jokes are just naff. And the saddest thing is, this one's no exception. But I'm going to tell it anyway. Who delivers orange fizzy drinks at Christmas? Santa Claus. There you go. That was that. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Boys and girls, girls and boys, it is the quiz, and I'm going to read out the scores. Now, I've got a couple of people that only got 2 points, and you're there thinking, two? Is that it? Yeah, well, at least they sent me their scores. Well done to Todd Pulte and David Ferguson. You're both as thick as each other. Well done, the two of you. With 3 points was Mary Pulte, so well done. She got 50% more than her husband, so you can be proud of that, Mary. With 4 points was Kerry Goldsworthy. With 5 points, we've got Nicola McLean, John Gomez, Barbara Wright, and Sean Sotka. Nice to hear from Sean Sotka. Sean Sotka runs ChristmasPodcasts.com. Definitely worth checking that out if you want to find other Christmas podcasts. Good to hear from you, Sean. With 6 points, we've got Jennifer Kay. With 7 points, we've got the lovely Nettie Tabeau, Pamela Wooten. Pamela. She likes hearing me say Pamela. Pamela. And Jack Unverfirth. With 8 points, we heard from him earlier, Benji Pearson and also Martin Goodman. And with 10 points, Bob Baker. Well done, Bob. He got 10 points. I don't know if you remember, in the episode last week, he only scored 6 points when he was doing the quiz. But I guess, you know, he had a slight advantage this time in the fact that he had heard all the questions before. But well done for getting 10, Bob. Now it's this episode's quiz, and all the questions are about Christmas drinks. Are you ready? I'll take that as a yes. Question number one. True or false? Eggnog does not contain egg. True or false? Question number two. Port is a popular drink at Christmas. I like that. It's like, this question isn't Christmassy at all. It's like, port is a popular drink at Christmas. Yeah, it's quite popular most of the year if you're a port drinker. But still, I'll put it in anyway, just because it's interesting. But in which direction should you pass the bottle? To the left or to the right? Which way do you pass the bottle? Okay, next one. Fill in the blank. Complete the drink. Hot, buttered, blank. What is the blank? Okay, question number four. Which country is Baileys made in? I don't know if you drink Baileys in your country. It's a very thick, creamy liqueur that people drink a lot of at Christmas. Very popular at Christmas. You have Baileys over ice. Okay, next one. Easy one. What animal is commonly featured in Coca-Cola's Christmas adverts? Okay. Right. Now it's a true or false one. Wassail is traditionally served warm. Is that true or is that false? Next one. Hot toddy is usually made with which juice? Banana, grape, lemon or milk? Here's a question for you, boys and girls. Is milk a juice? The answer is yes. It's called cow juice. You squeeze a cow, out comes this juice, milk. And also banana. Banana juice. Can you get banana juice? I don't know. Banana sludge. I don't know. Anyway, next one. What is the name of the popular winter drink from Italy made with egg liqueur and brandy? Any ideas? No? Okay. Okay. Next one. What is the key non-alcoholic ingredient in a Brandy Alexander? Okay. Brandy Alexander. What's in it? Brandy, clearly. I'm looking for the non-alcoholic ingredient. And, oh, this is the last question, is it? Goodness me. Right. What alcoholic drink is the most popular at the Christmas dinner table in the UK according to a 2020 poll? Okay, so in the year 2020, what was the most popular alcoholic drink to have at the Christmas dinner table? There we go. All right, those are your 10 questions. Let's see how we got on with these answers. Question number one, true or false? Eggnog does not contain egg. Well, that's false. Of course it contains egg. It's the first three letters. Egg. There they are. Plus also, it contains egg in the drink. Question number two. Port is a popular drink at Christmas, but in which direction should you pass the bottle? I mean, I don't think I've ever been in a situation where someone has passed the bottle of port. They just pour out a glass for you. I don't know if everyone's sitting around, swigging out of the bottle, passing on their germs of dirty sods. Anyway, it's to the left, and this is from an ancient naval tradition. And when I say navel, I mean belly button. So people would pour a little bit of port in their belly button and then pass the bottle, of course, and they'd pour a bit. And everyone had sticky belly buttons. Yeah, probably. That bit might not be true. Okay, next one. Fill in the blank. Complete the drink. Hot buttered blank. Well, I can tell you, boys and girls, it's hot buttered rum. And I can also tell you, I tried making hot buttered rum and I didn't care for it. I didn't care for it at all. You sort of melt a load of butter and then put it in with the rum. There's nothing else watering it down. It's just butter. So you just add in butter to rum and then it's all congealing at the top and you get butter all around your lips and it doesn't taste particularly nice because it's so strong. And yeah, I don't know if I was doing it wrong. Anyway, that's the one, hot buttered rum. Next one. Which country is Baileys made in? If I told you the full name is Baileys Irish Cream, then you would know it's made in France. Just kidding. No, it's made in Ireland. And the last couple of years, when I've been chatting to Jeannie Mulligan about Christmas in Ireland, she's been sat there drinking Baileys, getting hammered, making a fool of herself. Just kidding. She's great. But she does drink Baileys. And the next one. What animal is commonly featured in Coca-Cola's Christmas adverts? Well, that's the polar bears, isn't it? Yeah, although I haven't seen that lately. Are they still doing that? Who cares? Next one. Another true or false one. Wassail is traditionally served warm. True or false? Here's the thing. I've never even seen wassail. I don't know if anyone still drinks wassail, but it's meant to be warm. There you go. Next one. Hot toddy is usually made with which juice? Well, the answer is lemon juice. That was C. Yeah, not cow juice. What is the name of the popular winter drink from Italy made with egg liqueur and brandy? Well, that is Bombardino. Yeah, have you heard of a Bombardino? I have not. I did not get that question correct. Next one. What is the key non-alcoholic ingredient in a Brandy Alexander? Well, I put Coca-Cola, and the answer is cream. So I was very close indeed. And the final question, what alcoholic drink is the most popular at the Christmas dinner table in the UK according to a 2020 poll? Well, I said champagne and our survey said wine, particularly red wine followed by white wine. So I got that wrong as well. I crashed and burned. I got the last three wrong, end up with 7 points. Don't forget to email me your score, boys and girls, so I can read them out in the next episode. I hope you enjoyed that. Now we're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas? How about Blumenau, Brazil? So last year I told you about Gramado, the mountain resort town in Rio Grande do Sul, with its alpine chalets, chocolatiers, and Christmas light displays. So this episode, we are visiting Blumenau, which is another city in southern Brazil. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, many German-speaking immigrants settled across southern Brazil, and they kept much of their culture. This was true of the city of Blumenau. German elements are prevalent, such as in the food, the architecture, and the festivals. This little town is decorated with lights and ornaments, and it hosts the Park Vila Germanica, which is known for its year-round Christmas-themed shops, decorations, and German cultural activities. This is a Bavarian-style venue with gardens, and it serves as a year-round hub for activities and popular German eateries, including the Bier Villa, the beer hall. Although festive throughout the year, in December, it hosts the biggest Christmas market in Brazil with its illuminated streets, parades, and outdoor Christmas displays. Now, if you know of another hot spot for the holidays with a Deutschland influence, well, you march it to Jack, he'll advance it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the world.
Great work from Bob, again, as ever. Fantastic work. I could plug his podcast, but he did it himself earlier. So I'll just say, listen to Bob's podcast, Festive Foreign Film Fans. I will put a link in the show notes. Great work, Bob. Now we're doing this.
I did something I shouldn't have, and these people called me on it.
You didn't.
That's pretty low, mister. If I had a rubber hose, I would beat you.
Boys and girls, I have a story of shame for you now, and this one is a crying shame, and it's something that happened to me this year. Now, if you listen to my daughter's podcast, I'm Not Complaining, with Robin and Juno, then you probably would have already heard this story, but if you don't, I'm going to share it with you, and this is my take on what happened. Now, here's the deal. Among my many skills, mainly me being a gardener, I also am quite accomplished at balloon modelling. Would you believe? And sometimes what I do is me and the girls will go out somewhere fairly busy in town and we'll just sit there and make balloon animals and give them out. I never charge for it. It's not something I charge for. You know, it's just kids are going past and I say, oh, would you like a balloon animal? Or normally my girls will go and say, would you like a balloon animal? And I make them a balloon animal and they've got a balloon animal. Simple as that. It's just something I like doing with my daughters to try and teach them to be nice. Now, it's something we have done a number of times nearer Christmas. And there's a shopping centre very near to where I live. And at Christmas, I often buy a couple of big tubs of pouches of gold coins, the chocolate coins. So what we do is, as people are walking by, we say to the kids, would you like a balloon animal? And I get my daughters to ask, so I'm not some strange bloke offering sweets and balloon animals. You know, my daughters are there with me. They go out and say, would you like a balloon animal? And their kid will say, yeah, and the parent will bring them over. And we make the balloon animal, and then my daughters will give them a little mini bag of chocolate coins as well. And like I say, we've done this a couple of times at Christmas in this shopping centre. And I said to the girls this Christmas, you know, would you like to go and do it again this year? And they're like, yeah, yeah, we like that. So the three of us, me, Robin and Juno, went to the shopping centre. We found a bench where there was quite a bit of traffic, people walking past, and started making balloon animals. And in the past, it's not actually been that busy. I guess maybe we've gone too close to Christmas or too far away from Christmas, I don't know. But This day, a lot of people coming by, a lot of kids getting balloons and chocolate coins as well. And a guy comes up and he's like wearing a shirt and tie. Looks like he works there. He says, "Oh, what are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, we're just making balloon animals for the kids and giving out chocolate coins." He's like, "Are you part of the shopping centre?" I was like, "No, we're just doing it. I've done it a couple of times before." And he's like, "I see. Okay." I guess it's not a problem, is it? He's like, "Well, I'll go and check with my manager." I was like, "Okay, no problem." And off he goes. And we carried on making these balloon animals. And then we were downstairs and I glanced up as I saw this security guard coming down the stairs and he's looking at me and he's not giving me a particularly nice look. And there's about four or five kids with their parents sort of stood around waiting for their balloon animals. And I'm making these balloons and the guy comes over. He's like, "Have you got permission to be here?" I'm like, "Well, what would I need permission for? I'm not selling anything. I'm not charging anything. I'm just giving out balloon animals." And he's like, "Well, yeah, but you shouldn't be here." And I'm like, "Well, why shouldn't I? You know, what am I actually doing wrong? This is Christmas. We're doing a nice thing. Why have you got a problem with this?" And he's like, "Well, we're not insured." I'm like, "What do you mean you're not insured? It's balloon animals." And it got quite heated. Now, I was laughing and making light of the whole affair. And he's like, "Well, I'm going to ask you to stop doing that." I was like, "Well, look, I'm not going to stop now because I've still got kids waiting." So I carried on making balloon animals while I'm talking to him, handing out these balloon animals. My kids are handing out the gold coins while he's there arguing with me. And I'm trying to be as light-hearted as I can. And I'm like, "So what is the problem exactly? Can you explain to me? Is it because you hate Christmas?" And he's like, "Well, no, my manager's told me." I go, "Hang on a minute. Is your manager, like, green and covered in fur? Is he the Grinch or is he Ebenezer Scrooge?" And this was getting a bit of laughter out of the mums and dads that were around. They were quite enjoying it. But at the same time, you could tell they felt uncomfortable with what was going on with a security guard asking me to leave. Because as soon as the security guard comes over, they think, "Well, is the guy doing something wrong?" Clearly I wasn't, and they could see that. But it did sort of cast a shadow over things. Anyway, I'm carrying on making the balloons while I'm talking to him. And he's like, "Look, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. You can't do this. You haven't got permission to be here." And I was like, "Why don't you go and get your manager?" He's like, "Well, I've spoken to my manager." And I'm like, "Yeah, but why don't I speak to your manager?" And I was like, "Hang on a minute. Your manager's not the guy that I spoke to earlier, is it?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "So let's get this straight. Your manager couldn't tell me himself that he wanted me to leave. He had to come and get you to do it. Is that what happened?" He's like, "Well, yeah, I offered to come down." I was like, "Oh, you offered to come down?" And as soon as he said that, I just thought, do you know what? This is pointless. Because it's like he actually wants to ask me to leave. And he was such a jobsworth. Are you familiar with that term? A jobsworth? He was such a jobsworth that because I was doing something a little bit out of the ordinary, he wanted me out of there. And I said, "So hang on, what's going to happen here?" Right, so I'm still making balloons, don't forget. I'm still making the balloons, handing them out as we're arguing. Or talking. I say talking, we weren't really arguing. I said, "So what's going to happen then? Are you actually going to like grab hold of me and throw me out of here, like in front of my kids on Christmas Eve?" I think it was Christmas Eve. Might have been the day before. No, it was the day before Christmas Eve. And he's like, "Well, if I have to." And he suddenly moved his hand as if he was getting ready to grab hold of me. And I was like, "Oh." Right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to carry on making balloon animals, but I'm going to do it as I'm leaving, okay? Because I'm not going to let these kids, there's still a couple of kids waiting for balloon animals. I'm not going to let these kids not get a balloon animal when everyone else has, just because you're trying to ruin Christmas. That's what I said. And we started walking out. And I'm making the balloons. And he started following us. And he was right next to me. And I was like, I turned around. I said, "No." I said, "We're going to leave. You're not going to escort me out." And so he stopped. And we carried on walking. And I made the last two balloons. And as I'm making the last balloon, he was still stood about 20 metres down, just watching us, watching to make sure we left. It was such a shame. Because what is that teaching my little girls? You know, that you try and do something good and someone comes along and tries to stop you doing something good. I swear to you now, we were going to gain nothing from what we were doing. We weren't getting any money for it. We were just doing a nice thing, trying to spread a bit of Christmas cheer. You've got to remember, this is 2 days before Christmas. These kids are being dragged around the shops. They'd rather be at home watching TV, but they're getting dragged. No one's going to be buying presents for those kids that's taking them shopping because they don't want those kids to know what presents they're getting. So they're obviously buying stuff for other people. So these kids have just been dragged around. But, you know, wouldn't it be nicer to be dragged around holding a balloon animal than just being, you know, dragged from shop to shop? But no, this guy and his boss, they wanted us out of there, and that's what happened. And I got to say, that is a real story of shame, because I've done it a few years in the past. No one's ever spoken to us. We've just done what we've been doing, and then after we've run out of balloons or chocolate coins, we've left. I won't do it again now, or at least I won't do it again there. You know, I'm sure next year, you know, we'll go out and find somewhere else where there's people that we can make balloon animals for. But there you go, boys and girls. That's my story. Merry Christmas. Boys and girls, I haven't done a recommendation in quite a while, but just lately I've been listening to this show called The Unbelievable Truth. Now, this was a radio show on BBC Radio 4, but all the episodes, all of them, and there's a lot, I think there's only 6 episodes per season, but it's been running for like 24 seasons. So do the maths on that, boys and girls. 24 times 6 equals quite a lot. Each episode is half an hour long, and they get 4 comedians on there, usually comedians. Are they always comedians? I think they are. They sit there telling lies on a specific subject, but they have to squeeze in 5 things that are true. And the other 3 contestants have to buzz in when they think they've told the truth about something. So the subject, for example, could be, say, Christmas. And they're talking about Christmas for a couple of minutes. And in there, they put in 5 very unbelievable but interesting facts about Christmas. Yeah, it's really funny. It's a really good show. You learn a few interesting things as well, which is kind of cool. It's presented by a chap called David Mitchell, who you may or may not know. He was in a TV show called Peep Show. He's also on Would I Lie to You, which is a very funny panel show that we have here in the UK. Yeah, it's just a great show. I think you'll enjoy it. So all the episodes are on Audible, and you don't have to pay for them if you're a member of Audible. So check it out, The Unbelievable Truth. I think you'll find it fun. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Thanks so much for everyone that's emailed in, and also all the people that gave me your quiz scores. Don't forget to give me your quiz score for this episode. If you want to get in touch, the email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
I guess I could deliver this stuff. It's not as glamorous as helping Santa. But there'll be trouble if the folks can't enter their sweepstakes. Besides, Christmas gratuities.